I prepared a little bit about Hilchos Tzitzis and Tefillin, when Rabbi Soloveitchik was in the University of Berlin, so he met all the Yekkes there. So the Yekkes have a practice when they put on a talus, they say the bracha, they hold the talus in front of them, then they say the satavitzis, then they put it behind them, and then they put it on top of their heads to do the atifa. So he didn't want to say it's not. He said it's questionable. He said because the Gemara says in Psachim, kol mitzvahs kulam baruch aleim oiva lasiyasim, and the Rebbeim and the Rishonim explain why does it say oiva lasiyasim? It's a difficult word. Gemara has to dig up psukim in Tanakh to show that oiva means in advance. One to say kodem lasiyasim, kodem might mean a half an hour before. Oiva means immediately before. That's why the Rishonim say the bracha should be recited oiva lasiyasim as opposed to oiva the oiva. If it's too far in advance, not. So the Gemara says, when he put on tefillah me'emesai mevaruch aleim, when he said baruch on the tefillah shal yad, when the tefillah are on the arm and you're about to tighten it, that's immediately before. So he thought that this was questionable, to hold the talus in front of you and then say the baruch, and then you put it behind you. Hold the talus behind you immediately before you do the atif. Okay. Morgan Avraham on Hilchos Tzitzis quotes the practice of the Arizal, that instead of having one nekev in the corner of the beged, then you have the chutei tzitzis, you pull through the chutei tzitzis, so they're holding onto the beged from the top and from the bottom. So the chassidim have on the talus cut, they have two nekovim, they pull the things through one, they pull it back out through the other one. So the whole tzitzis is held on one, it's held by little, a quarter of an inch of a beged, and the whole tzitzis comes out from one side of the beged. So the Magen Avraham says, that's a midas chassidus, and the person should only do that on the talus katan, what people won't see. On the talus gadol, it's going to be mechzi ki yuhara. People are going to see he's machma like the Arizal to have like that. So Rav Soloveitchik said, who said it's machma? Who says you're yotze? Maybe you're not yotze like that. He thought if you have a beggar that has two holes, he thought it'd be better only to pull the tzitzis through one of the two holes. He thought it's not right.
Is that
alakanaf?
It's big kanaf, like anything.
Is
that, what's the reason why
it's possible? That's the question. How is this supposed to hold on to the beggar? So Darizal came up with a chiddush, but he was questioning whether it's kosher. He thought maybe it could be that you're not even yoytze. Yeah. Rav Soloveitchik's practice was he wouldn't kiss the tzitzis. In the end of Kriya Shema, a lot of people kissed it. Tzitzit, that's the minhag agro. Many minhagim of Rav Soloveitchik are the minhagi agro. Many of them are Lubavitch minhagim because he was brought up in a Lubavitcher village. His father was the rabbi of the Lubavitcher village. He told the whole story why the practice was in that city, Chaslavitch. They always had a misnagdusha rav, even though it was a Lubavitcher village. Why they always insist on having a misnagdusha rav? Because when Napoleon wanted to take over the whole world, so there was a machlokes, he wanted to emancipate the Jews, wanted to give them equal rights. So there was a big machlokes among the Hasidish and Tzaddikim, whether they should pray for Napoleon's victory or his downfall. So the first Lubavitcher Rebbe was of the opinion that if the Jews would be emancipated, if you have freedom, then we'll all assimilate them and we don't observe mitzvahs. We know how to deal with isolation. We know how to deal with anti-Semitism. We don't know how to deal with freedom. Look in America. The rate of intermarriage is gefelach. And in Europe, when there was so much anti-Semitism, there wasn't as much intermarriage as you have now. So the first Lubavitcher Rebbe felt you have to pray that Napoleon should lose. And the other Chassidish Rebbe said, no, the Jews will be emancipated. He's promising freedom for the Jews. We should pray that he should win. So the story goes that somehow the Chassidish Tzaddikim all made up that whoever's going to blow shofar first on that Rosh Hashanah, his prayers will be answered. So one of the Chassidish Rebbes who wanted Napoleon to win, so he told his Chassidim that they're going to start at the crack of dawn, and they're going to leave out all the piyutim, they're going to daven quickly, they're not going to give any drasha, and then they're going to blow shofar first, because it's crucial, whoever blows shofar first, his prayers will be answered. So this Rebbe did like that, one of the prominent rabbis. He davened fast, and then when he blew shofar, he felt that he lost already. He felt that he understood already that Lubavitcher Rebbe had blown shofar before him. So a couple of weeks later, a couple of months later, when they met, so he asked him, "I think you must have blown shofar before me. How did it happen? I left everything. I left out all the piyutim." So first, Lubavitcher Rebbe said, "I felt it was such an important issue. We blew shofar before davening. Who says you have to wait in the middle of Musaf? We blew shofar before Shachris because he felt that it was so crucial." So not only were they praying, not only was the Lubavitcher Rebbe praying that Napoleon should lose the war, he had Napoleon's from France, so there were Lubavitcher Chassidim in France, and they were spying on the secrets of the army, and they were giving over the secrets to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He was giving it over to the Russians. So somehow Napoleon found out about that, that Schneerson is giving over the secrets in the army. So he told his soldiers that they have to catch him and they have to kill him because they want to win the war. Napoleon wants to win the war. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe was running to avoid being caught by the French army. And then they surrounded the city, Khaslavich. He went to hide in that city. And how did they want to hide? They were going from house to house to check to see where the Rebbe is. So the Hasidim asked the rabbi at that time in the village, happened to be from Valozhin, Hamasnagin. Bimikra happened to be. I'm so they said the name, but I don't remember it all. It's probably printed in the books. So he said that the Hasidim came to the rabbi, and they knew he was a Hamasnagin. So they asked him, "If we hide the Rebbe in your home, will you, if the soldiers come to knock on the door, will you give over the Rebbe?" Because he knew he was a Masnagid, he didn't hold from the Chassidus. "Will you give over the Rebbe to the French soldier?" He said, "Chas v'shalom, I don't agree with the Rebbe's hashkafas, but I would never give over a Jew that they're going to kill him. Don't worry." So they hid the Rebbe in the basement of the rabbi's home. And when the soldiers came knocking on the door, they asked, "They're looking for Schneerson. He's giving on the secrets of the French army to the Russian government." So the rabbi put on an act and he said, "Schneerson, he's the greatest danger to Orthodoxy, to Judaism. Give me the man, I'll choke him with my own hands." So, okay. So they don't have to search in his house. He says he wants to choke him with his own hands. He's the biggest danger to Judaism. So they didn't bother to look in his house. They see that he hates him. So they looked around the whole city, they couldn't find him. They realized he must have slipped out somehow, so they stayed a few days and then they left. So then when the Rebbe came out from hiding, he said, "Sometimes it's a mazel that the rabbi in the city is a misnagid, so you could put on such an act." So from that time on, that was the choyke in that city, in Chaslav. So they always have a misnagdish rov. So Rabbi Soloveitchik's father was the rabbi in that village. He also learned in Valozhin. So many of Rabbi Soloveitchik's menhagim he picked up from the Lubavitcher, many of them picked up from the Gro that was in Valozhin Yeshiva. Everything was based on the Gro. So one of the menhagim from the Gro was he wouldn't kiss the tzitzis in the middle of Kriyat Shema. He felt that would be considered a hepsik. When are you supposed to put the talus over your head? What part of the davening do you not put the talus over your head? So Rabbi Soloveitchik said, as he recalls, for Dovish Bikdusha, you're supposed to put the talus over your head. He answered, Kaddish Kedusha Baruch Hu. That's what the Achrayim say. There is a dispute in the Achrayim whether reciting Yud Gimel Midas and the Slichas and Aseres and Meitshuva, is that considered a Dovish Bikdusha or not? So they say the three Nafkiminas are where they need a minion. A lot of times the boys are traveling home and Aseres and Meitshuva by plane, or the traveling Teretz Yisrael for Yom Kippur or for Rosh Hashanah, whatever. So there's a shayla, if you don't have a minyan, you can say slichas, but can you say the Yud Gimel Midas? So the common practice is you don't say Yud Gimel Midas, we treat it like a Dovish Bikdusha. So the first Nafkamina, where they need a minyan, second Nafkamina, where you need Amida, because in Shulchan Aruch, the Magen Avraham quotes, you're supposed to have Amida, but Dovish Bikdusha is supposed to stand. And the third Nafkamina is where they need Atifa. If it's a Dovish Bikdusha, you're supposed to put the talus over your head. And then in addition to Dovish Bikdusha, so Rav Soloveitchik said, the meaning used to be that they would put the talus over the head when they said Shemona Esrei, based on the Pasuk in Tehillim, Tefila L'Yoni Ki Ya'atof, Lifnei Hashem Yishpach Sicho. So Atifa there doesn't really mean atifa to put the talis over your head, put to wear a hat. Kiata means he bellows over in pain. The ani can't afford healthy food, so he's sick. He can't take care of himself. He can't afford to take care of himself. So the pasha b'shad and pasha kiata means he bends over in pain. But an additional level of interpretation is tefillah ani kiatov. When he davens tefillah, he has b'shmad esrei. He does atif. So Rav Chaim would do atifa for baruch hu before birchas kriyas shema. Then he would take the atifa off before kriyas shema. Then he would put the atifa back for the shmona esrei. Why did he take the atifa off for kriyas shema? So he said that's based on the medrash that's quoted by the Taz. The Taz on Simen Ches and Hilchos Tzitzis quotes a medrash that there's a machlokes bishamei b'shilul in the Mishnah and Brachos. Bishamei rubbed the opinion that you need a specific position when you recite Kriyas Shema. So when you say Kriyas Shema in the morning, you have to stand. You should be in a reclining position. B'shach b'chav kumech. B'shach b'chav means when you're lying down. B'kumech means when you're standing up. And B'shilu say doesn't mean that. Means b'zman shchiva, b'zman kima. Because Pasuk says b'lech tucha b'derech. So b'lech tucha b'derech has the connotation kol adam kari kidarka. So that's in the Gemara and Brachos in the first paragraph. So the Taz quotes a medrash on that idea. Medrash says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is easygoing. It's not like a melech basav adam. A melech basav adam, when he sends a letter to his subject, so he demands that all the subjects stand up when they read the letter. If you ever went to a Lubavitcher wedding, so they always read a letter from the Lubavitcher Rebbe that he sent the mazel tov to someone else. He didn't send the mazel tov to this fellow. The Rebbe's not alive anymore. But they'll read a letter, so they'll request, kill the audience, please stand up, because they're reading a letter from the Rebbe. So the Medrash says, when the Melech sends a letter to the subjects, they have to stand up when they read the letter. Baruch Shalom is very easygoing. Kol adam kari kedarki, mekabel malchus shamayim. With atifa, without atifa, standing, sitting, reclining, whatever you want, kol adam kari kedarki. The Rav Soloveitchik interpreted that there's a Gemara in Brachos, there's a Tosfos has a kasha. He said, that's the answer to Tosfos' kasha. That Beisilu's opinion is that you're not allowed to be machma like b'shamer. You're not allowed to show that you're going out of your way to recite Kriyas Shema in a specific form. So that was his practice also. He would take off, he would have atifa for Baruch Hu, then he would take off the atifa before Kriyas Shema, then he would put back the atifa before he would daven Shema Esrei. So the Beis once gave a Yortzeit drasha on Inyanei Tzitzis. In the middle of the drasha, there was 2 hours halacha and 2 hours agoda. There used to be the Yortzeit, she used to be 4 hours long. So in the Chelek Agoda, he mentioned what the commentaries have on Chumash. They point out that there are 2 psukim that seems to be 2 comments of the Chazal on the psukim seem to be contradictory. One pasuk says, as a schar for Avraham Avinu's refusing to take Mechut Batzrech Nal, when he had the Muhammad, the 4 kings, but the 5 kings, and he said he doesn't want to take some milk, so he said, Kach, Ten Yan Nevesh Vachush Kach Loch. So Avraham Avinu says he's not going to take Mechut Batzrech Nal. So because as a reward for not taking Chut, he was Zecha, his descendants, Jewish people were Zecha to the mitzvah of Tzitzis. And then there's another medrash that says, after the Malbol was over, so Noach, Vayita Nachish Adama, Vayita Kerem, and then he made wine. He made wine, that's what they say. Wine is almost the history books, right? That they have riots that wine already existed in the days of Adam Arishon. Noach was 10 generations later. Wine was very early. The people figured out how to make wine. So because then Noach became drunk and he was naked in bed. So when the children heard about it, so it says, "Bikach shem v'yafes asasimla." Doesn't say v'yikhu. So Rashi quotes in the Medrash, it was really Shem's idea. That's the right thing to do, whether people know that you're doing the right thing or not. But Yafes saw that Shem is doing a nice thing, so he said he's going to go along. So Yafes did something that etiquette requires. Shem did what ethics requires. There's such an expression in English, the categorical imperative. You know you're mechuyav to do this, it's the right thing to do, whether people agree or the people don't agree, whether people are watching or not, that's ethics. You know, this is the ethical thing, this you have to do like this. So shame felt he has to cover the father. He has to go backwards, cover the father. He's not allowed to leave the father like that. Yefes, it says, Vayikach Shem v'Yefes. It was Shem's idea. Yefes saw he's doing a good thing. He'll jump along. He'll go along. So that's why Noach gave a bracha. He says, Yapta lekim leYefes. Yefes should stick to etiquette. He should go along with when other people are doing good things. Yefes' descendants should continue to do things. V'yishkan ba'ol leShem. But the Hashras HaShchein will only be by the Jewish people on the Beis HaMikdash ba'ol leShem. Because Shem does the ethical thing. So the Meforshim HaChumash, Rashi quotes the both Midrashim, I think. So the Sifsa Chacham quotes from the earlier, many of Meforshim HaChumash, they ask, isn't it a contradiction? Were the Jewish people Zecha Tetzitz is because of Shem covering up the father, or were the Zecha Tetzitz is because of Avraham Avinu refusing to take the Chut Vatzvech now? So the answer, no, the two parts Tetzitz is the Beged and the Chutim. So the Beged is in the schus of Shem, because he covered up the father with a beged, and the chutim is in the schus of Avraham Avinu. So that's what the Meforshim had on Chumash. Rav Soloveitchik said, why do you split between the beged and the chutim? So he said, because the Magen Avraham recommends that people should wear the beged under their shirt, and only the chutei tzitzis should be exposed. So nobody sees if you're wearing a beged shel tzitzis. That's not etiquette. People don't see what you're doing. So he, that's ethics. Ethics dictates you do the right thing, even if nobody knows whether you're doing the right thing. So that the Jewish people are zeicha in the schus of shame, because shame did what was the right thing, even though no one else would know what he's doing. And the chutim should be exposed, that people are seeing that you're doing the right thing. So that's in the schus of Avraham Avinu, because Avraham Avinu said, Mechut Vatzrech now.
Rebbe?
Yeah?
Going back to the whole, why would Rav Soloveitchik not be misadvised? There's Kedusha in Berachas Kriya Shema, no? We say Kadosh, Kadosh.
Yeah.
Is that not considered Darsh Kedusha?
We don't stand up for Kadosh, Kadosh. Why not? It's a Kedusha, it's a Dovash Kedusha. You're not saying the whole Pasuk. If you would say the whole Pasuk, so it's a Pasuk, but you'd say half a Pasuk there. So that's mutter to say b'toras davish a big dusha. So Rav Soloveitchik suggested maybe that pasuk that says the lechtuch v'aderach kol adam kari kedarkai, maybe that's a din that whenever you're reciting psukim, you have a right to recite psukim even without all of the hachanas, that you don't need a minyan, and you know, even though it should have been a davish a big dusha, you don't need a minyan, and you don't need amida, and you don't need atifa. So he thought that, he said, me'ikra din, you don't really have to stand during Kriyas HaTorah. How does he know? Because he says he used to sit next to his father when he was a little boy, Kriyas HaTorah. He says if it would have been a din, his father would have smacked him so much, he would never have forgotten it. He said the father never bothered him. His father was very strict. So he says, obviously, the minyan to stand during Kriyas HaTorah, they quote the meaning from the Maharam Rutenberg. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a jewel. They said, Maharam Rutenberg stood. It doesn't say that he made the Balabatim stand. Only he stood. Balabatim sat. That was a private minig. Rav Soloveitchik thought, why? But Kriyas HaTorah is a Dovash HaBikdusha. The Gemara says, you need a minion. Mishnah Megillah says, you need a minion. He says, yeah, it's a Dovash HaBikdusha. But since you're saying Psukim, so I have this head there of Kol Adam Kari Kedarkan. So he said, maybe that's the reason why it's permissible to sit during Kriyas HaTorah. Mikra din is permissible to sit when you say the Kedusha in the Birchas Kriyashma takes on the same din as Kriyashma. It's part of Kriyashma. The Rabbana is part of the Kriyashma.
Based on that, do you need itur when you make a bracha, on, like when you get an aliyah?
Well, do you have to wear a talis over your head?
Do you need?
I don't know, somehow the mezamein does have to stand. The people who answer Baruch Hu don't have to stand. The mezamein does have to stand. Rav David Lipschitz, but always when a boy would get an aliyah, a single boy, and he would wear a talis, he would always walk over and put the talis over his head. He'd make sure that they had atifa when they said the baruch. But the tzibur doesn't have to stand.
So how does Kol Adam Kari Kedarkai apply to Kriyas HaTorah? I understand it applies to Birchas Kriyashma.
Yeah.
But what shaykhus does Birchas Kriyashma
have? So the pasuk is telling me whenever you're laying psukim, it doesn't have all the requirements of a davish abigdusha. That was his suggestion. Yeah. Anochas Tfilin, Rabbi Soloveitchik's practice used to be that he put on the whole shal yad till the end of the fingers before put on the shalrosh, because that's a tshuva in the Mishkanes Yankiv. Mishkanes Yankiv was one of the early talmidim in Valosh. He used to visit the yeshiva every year. The Rabbi Valoshin was mechabed him to give a shiur. So Mishkanes Yankiv claims that a lot of Mishanim hold like that. This, they quote that this was the practice of the Chafetz Chaim also, the Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, that they would put on the whole shal yad. He used to be a Rebbe in Torah V'das. He was the Masmich in Torah V'das, Rabbi Rifkin. He was a Lubavitcher, so he wrote a whole sefer, Ashkafta, the Rebbe. He was there close to the fifth Rebbe, I think, when the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe passed away. The last Rebbe was the seventh, the one before was his father-in-law, the sixth, and the fifth Rebbe passed away. So there's a long footnote there about this practice, whether you should put on the whole shal yad before. And Shulchan Aruch says you just put on a little bit of shal yad over here, and before you wrap it on the arm, then you put on the shal rosh. Because I think Mara says the ritzua has to be so long that you can wrap it around the arm. So the Rishonim assume that's how long the ritzua has to be, but it's not part of Hanochah shal yad. When you have over here, that's already enough. That was what Moshe did like that. Moshe did like it says in Shulchan Aruch, he only put on the shal yad, he put on the shal rosh, and then he made all the other krichas. And then the Magen Avraham quotes Rab Chaim Vital, I think. The more correct is he should put on the seven krichas also. And it's not a hepsik between the brach and the shal yad and the shal rosh. It's a hemshach of the mitzvah. So why don't you put on the krichas over here also hemshach? So they give an explanation on pikabola that this is like the chosim putting on a ring on the kala. We say rastachli. We say the Rastach HaKadosh Baruch is marrying the Jewish people. So Kolzman, you don't have the Shal Rosh, the Chosin is not there. The Shal Yad is a Kal, the Shal Rosh is a Chosin. Some Kabbalistic explanation they give. So that's what most people do. They put on the Shal Yad till here, then they put on the Shal Rosh, and they put on the Krichas. And the Mishkanes Yankiv wrote a tshuva. He thinks that the Rabbi Shonim will say, the Ritzu has to be so long because that's Hanochas Tvilin. So you're not supposed to put on the Shal Rosh till you put on the Shal Yad. So you should put on the whole Shal Yad. Rav Soloveitchik mentioned when we were learning, he used to give shiurim in the yeshiva, Hilchos Tzitzit, Hilchos Tefillin, Shulchan Aruch. So he said that once a balabos approached him, he saw the way he was putting on tefillin. So he said, Rabbi, you're supposed to put on only up till here. Then, so he said he didn't want to get involved. So he said, I forgot. That's what he would avoid the confrontation. He would say, I made a mistake. I forgot. My father came from Europe and he learned here by Moshe Soloveitchik. The yeshiva was ready here. It wasn't any longer on the Lower East Side. So Moshe Soloveitchik made everybody change the kesher shal rosh. Everybody has a kesher that's like a square. He insisted you have to make the other kesher that looks like a dalet. And other things he wouldn't insist that you have to follow his menhagim. But he thought that you're not Yotze. If you look in the Rishonim, they spell out step by step how you make the kesher. It comes out to be a square. And they say, if you do it, otherwise you're not Yotze. It's a problem. The Korban Nisanel had a son who was also Talmid Chacham. Korban Nisanel's son's name was Taya Vile. I don't know what kind of a name it is. Taya Vile. So he has a collection of tshuvas. So someone, he has a tshuva about this, someone raised the possibility that maybe you're not Yotze if you have a square, maybe it has to be a dalet. So he said, how can it be that that's la'akev? They just invented this 100 years ago. In the earlier generation, no one ever had a dalet. Everybody had a square. That's what the Rambam says. He says it's a ribua. It should be a square. Rabbi Soloveitchik said, no, that's not what he means. It has to be a dalet. Ribua means that the bar on top should be the same length as the bar on the side. But it does mean a square, but that's not what the word ribua means. Anyway, that's Rav Soloveitchik followed his father's way. Maybe it's Rav Chaim, I don't know. He said he got it from his father, that yeah, you have to tell everybody, they have to change. They have to change.
So do you think it's kedai to put on the box once in your life, just to be, not to be kakata del manach?
I don't know. I don't know. Here in the neighborhood, some people claim that Rabbi Breuer died at the age of 98. So So they say that he changed his kesher sharosh instead of a square. He made it into a dalet when he was 96. So somebody in Breuers, years ago, I used to daven in Breuers. I live right across the street. So someone saw that I have a dalet. So he said, he's supposed to have a square. So I said, they told me Rabbi Breuer has. He said, when you reach the age of 96, then you change it. You're not 96 yet. But I gotta find out. They told me there's something missing in this story. The Mishnah Berurah has a chiddush that he suggests that you don't want the kesher shal yad to move away from the bayis shal yad. That's a kpeda in the Zohar, I think. So he recommends you should stitch it. You take a little thread and you sew it on. So Rab Soloveitchik, when he gave the shur Menuchas Tefillin, he thought that may be possible. Because the Gemara says you have a Mabarta. Mabarta is the back part of the Tefillin where the Tzur goes through. So Rashi says, why is it called Mabarta? Mabarta means it can pass through. But if you stitched it down, you can't pass it through. You can't move it. So he thought that it could be that you're not Yotze if you do it like the Mishnah Berurah recommends. In Shulchan Aruch, they quote Behetev quotes. Maybe it's in the Magen Avraham also. I remember seeing in Behetev quotes that the Arizal was opposed to reciting of Yigdal. Why was he opposed? What's wrong with Yigdal? So Rabbi David Cohen from Flatbush wrote quite a few volumes on the Siddur. He has a lot to say on everything. He's a super genius. So he claims that the reason why the Arizal was opposed to reciting Yigdal, because it was composed by Immanuel Haromi. In Shulchan Aruch, the Machaber Rabbi Yosekar mentions him, Lebizoyim. He says you're not allowed to read novels on Shabbos, and Sifrei Immanuel Haromi, not allowed to read in the weekdays either, because it's bittel zman, and bittel Torah, and bittel everything. It's all garbage. So he mentions his name. So Rabbi David Cohen thought that it was composed by Immanuel Haromi. So people contacted Rabbi David Cohen that it can't be true, because Yigdal existed before Immanuel Haromi came on the scene and before he was born. So he insisted that he thinks that Immanuel Haromi touched it up, that the way we have it now in the Siddur, it was edited or it's changed a little bit. He said maybe that's why the Arizal was opposed. Rav Soloveitchik gave a different explanation why we shouldn't say Yigdal. He said that he thought that this was a chukas akum, that in our religion, we don't recite, I think the Catholics call it the catechism. They recite the animamins, what they believe. Many people have a practice, if they finish davening in the morning, you say all the 13 animamins when they're on. Okay, but you don't make a whole public participation. You don't make it into the whole community says it. Yigdal, you're reciting the Yigimel Ikari Hamuna as part of the davening. So he said that they picked up from the Catholics, and he thought that's what the Arizal was opposed to. Rabbi Soloveitchik obviously used to say about stained glass windows. It comes from the Catholics that they wanted people to feel when they're in the church as if they're in heaven. So when the light, when the sun shines in from outside through the stained glass windows, it gives you another worldly feeling. He must have read it in the Catholic literature. And he said, we don't believe in that. You're not supposed to have stained glass windows. So they argued with him that Lampert Auditorium used to be a shul, and that's why they had stained glass windows. So he said, they didn't consult me when they made the windows. And this shul, that shul, he said, they didn't consult me. He thought that it's Keneged Adin. So what's at the end of davening? And a lot of shuls on Leil Shabbos or Shabbos morning, so they sing Yigdal. So Rav Soloveitchik thought, instead of singing Yigdal, you should sing Adon Olam. Why? Why should you sing Adon Olam at the end? So he said, this I think he must have picked up when he was in Germany. When we start Shacharis in the morning, how do we begin? So the Chazan says, it starts with Birchas HaShachar. By the Ekkes, they start with Adon Olam. The Chazan starts Shacharis, says out loud, Adon Olam Hashem Malach. And the Mefarshim in the Oitzer HaTfilas, the Mefarshim explain, what is Adon Olam all about? So it says in Shulchan Aruch, when you recite Aleph Dal Nun Yud, or Yud Kei Vav Kei, you pronounce Aleph Dal Nun Yud, supposed to have in mind HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the power, he's the ruler over the whole world, and he's Hayahayva V'yihiyah. So we don't always have that Kabbana in mind. You're going to have that Kabbana, it's going to take you forever to daven. Every other pasuk has Shem Hashem. So we make a declaration in the beginning, Adon Olam Hashem Malach, whenever we say Aleph Dalet Nun Yud Yud Kei Vav Kei, we have all of these kabbalas. This is what we mean. So since we made the declaration in the beginning, we don't have to have this in mind when we say the Shem Hashem. We already said what we mean by the Shem Hashem. So anyway, so Rav Soloveitchik thought that the reason why we recite Adon Olam at the end of the davening is because the Gemara in Brachas says there are Abba Dvarim Tzrichim Chizuk. There are four things that need Chizuk. What is Chizuk? So Rashi explains, the Gemara explains it, Rashi explains it. Not that clear in the Gemara. Even if you daven, you should daven again a second time, a third time, a fourth time. When you learn, learning Torah, you need a chizuk. So whenever we finish a mesichta, you start right away another mesichta. Whenever you finish a perik, you start right away another perik. Whenever you finish the davening is one of the things that needs chizuk. That's why when you finish, someone gets chazak, the last aliyah, bereshis of shmos of yikra. So that's why this great man, chazak, chazak, v'nis chazek. So it says in the Shulchan Aruch, it's based on that Gemara and Brachas, that Abba Dvarim Tzichim Chizuk, one of them is Liman HaTorah. So Shabbos morning, when we finish Chumash Bereshit, Shabbos afternoon, we're going to start Shmos right away. Hasim Chazter, we start right away. We finish with Zos HaBrach, we start right away. The next Aliyah is Bereshit. And even when you don't start right away, you say Chazak, Chazak, and it's Chazek, we should come back and repeat it. So that's in davening. We finish davening Ma'ariv, and we say we're prepared to start davening Shachas already now. We say Adon Olam to indicate that we're prepared to start davening.
So why did you say Chizak because there are more than that?
Why?
If the whole point is because we need the Chizak and we're not going to wait till Mincha, just because there are more than the next Aliyah is Bereishis, so why do you say Chizak?
Yeah. Why do you say Chizak? Okay. We're explaining what we're doing. Okay. That's the Chizak. In the Birchas HaShachar, Rav Soloveitchik did not recite the Bracha Nosan LeYoyev Kach because it doesn't appear in the Gemara. It was composed later. And that's a Kepeda from Rishonim. A lot of Rishonim say you're not supposed to recite the Bracha. You're only supposed to recite Brachas that were composed by the Anshei Knesset HaGdoila. Gemara says, Mikam V'yalachev to the Tekufa Anshei Knesset HaGdoila. Also, the Thapa B'Shrach HaShem Lach. We're not allowed to make up your own Brachas. So that's the minig agro, not the san nesan yavka. But most people do say the two brachas. So what's the difference on nesan yavkach and nesan yisrael b'gvura? And hakan nesan yavkach is to all of mankind. Yisrael b'gvura is only for the Jewish people. Rav Soloveitchik once gave a drasha for the Mizrahi on this. It's printed. So he thought, and nesan yavkach means strength. Yisrael b'gvura means heroism. He said, Shimshon HaGibor. It doesn't mean he happened to be strong also, but it does mean Shimshon, the strong man. It means the hero. The Jewish people have heroism. The whole world is going in one direction, and we go in the opposite. We're prepared to fight against the whole world. That's this Rav Soloveitchik did not mention, but Dr. Lamb once held a drush about this. We have... In Parshas Bahaloscha, we have the two psukim. We even saw Horon and Menucha Yoimar. So we paskin like the Tana that there are not Chamishuchim Shetoira, there are seven Sfarim. Because Chumash, the word Chumash is wrong. Chumash means the one fifth. The Sefer Bamidbar is really three Sfarim. Bamidbar till the Himitzahor, and the two psukim is the Sefer Shalem. And then from Menucha Yoimar till the end of Bamidbar is the third Sefer. So if you divide by Midbar into three, so you have seven. And the Gemara says, based on the Pasuk in Mishnah, Chachmas, Bansa, Besa, Chotzva, Amodeh, Shiva, that there are seven Sfarim. So usually between one Sefer and the other, you have four blank lines, but here you don't have four blank lines, you have Nunim Hafuchim. So what do the Nunim Hafuchim represent? So Nun in Aramaic is a fish. There's a Yalkut Shemayni. There's a Yalkut Shemani that has regular Midrashim. Yalkut Shemani is a Likud from Gemara, from Midrashim, from Tanchuma, from Medrash Rabbah, from Yerushalmi, Tosef, there's all kinds. And then there's a Yalkut Horaveni. Yalkut Horaveni only has Midrashim Pliya, strange Midrashim. You have to break your head to figure out what it's talking about. So Dr. Lim, what's held at Rosh, so he said over, the Yalkut Horaveni says on the Nunim Hafuchim, Nun means the fish. Nun Hafuch means the fish that swims against the tide. The Jewish people, the Gemara says, are the fish that swims against the tide. And these two psukim, Vahim Sahar and Nuchay Yaimar, these are the two psukim that talk about the Jewish people traveling through the whole world. We're traveling in the Midbar, and we're traveling in America, and we're traveling all over Europe, we travel in Morocco, all the Jews are all over the world, and the whole world is going in one direction, and the Jewish people are going the other direction. That's why he's called Avram HaEvri, the whole world is on this side, and Avram Avinu is on the other side. The Jews were known for their heroism. They were never too strong. We didn't have so much kach, but we had gevura. We had a lot of heroism. We had the chutzpah to fight against the whole world. Anyway, so that's what Rav Soloveitchik said. He didn't say the comment on the nunim afuchim. The Gemara says a kosher fish has fins and scales, so therefore, because it has scale, al pidin, it's not be kaskeset. All it needs is one scale. It's kosher. Strictly speaking, the Gemara says, but usually has a lot of scales. So the Gemara says, and Avodah Zarah, when they have this sugya about kosher fish, the Gemara says, because it's coated with scales, it protects the fish, has the ability to swim against the tide, the kosher fish. Trefa fish don't have scales, so they can't swim against the tide. So the Jewish fish, the Jewish people are like the kosher fish, the nunim hafuchim, that they have the ability to swim against the tide. Okay. I'm not sure if I'll be able to be here next Tuesday. I may have to go to the OU. But should we schedule for a different day?
Anyways, we don't have, because next Tuesday there's a bunch of mesivas for a different shiurim, so I don't think we're going
to. Okay. So I won't be here either. Okay. Good.
Is there anything Mishnah Berurah says that the minig is unless.